Okay. My name is Brad Johnson. I used to work for Clear Channel, but not by choice. Unfortunately, they bought the radio stations in my town, and I didn't have a choice. I had to work for them at that point. And since then, things have gotten really bad in the industry, and let's just say I'm no longer working for Clear Channel, although I do have a labor case, and they may be forced to hire me back in the future. We have some excellent panelists up here with lots of information on the corporate media. Let me just introduce everybody. Hannah Sassman down there on the end, and Davey D, who's worked at KMEL and now is with KPFA, and what a switch that was. Peter Hart from FAIR. FAIR is a great organization. And Jeff Perlstein with Media Alliance, which is just a super organization that we've worked with before in San Francisco. Everybody can have 5 to 7 minutes to talk, and then we can kind of kick it around a little bit. Hannah, do you want to go first?
Sure. I'm Hannah Sassaman. Can everyone hear me okay? Yeah? I'm with the Prometheus Radio Project, which Brad didn't mention. This is an organization based in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, which is dedicated to proliferating and supporting the networks that already exist of low-power FMs. These are low-power stations that are limited by 100-watt licenses that are now legally built across the United States to a limited number. And we also do a large amount of media diversity and democracy work. And I was hired by Prometheus to spearhead the campaign against Clear Channel, which came to a fabulous first climax this weekend as it will continue. As Jeff and I and some other fun activists went into the NAB and presented a spoof of Clear Channel called CheapChannelRadio.com. You might have heard about this today. I hope you have. And we are hoping, and I'm hoping, that some of Clear Channel's pretty evident crimes and internal failings that caused them to be this kind of big failing economic juggernaut will be able to be communicated to a diverse group of media activists and the public at large through spoofs, through general media awareness efforts. How long do I have to talk?
5 to 7 minutes.
Oh, then I'll talk some more. Clear Channel sucks. Everyone else would... People will tell you more about that, but Clear Channel is the largest owner of radio stations in the country by a huge amount. They own over 1,200 stations in the U.S. They own dozens of television stations. They own a third of the billboards you see, especially in big cities. They own concert promotion industry and ticketing industry, and all of these different parts of Clear Channel kind of collude to monopolize how music is heard and produced and bought and sold here in this country. And why aren't voices like ours heard? Mainly because Clear Channel and folks at the NAB lobby Congress and the FCC to make sure that even the slight amount of public airwaves that should remain, the paltry amount, are constricted more and more every year. So what my next goal is to make sure that in 2003, when the FCC is going to be meeting to discuss a new kind of legislation which would not only further deregulate radio, it would also kind of horizontally and vertically deregulate, allowing a company like Clear Channel to own newspapers in your town, to own distribution networks for newspapers in your town. So if we don't want a monoculture to exist, we need to make sure that the FCC does not pass this legislation. And so I hope that through this weekend and continuing discussions, we can brainstorm some good ways to do that. That's a bit of a ramble, but I'm sure I can discuss a little bit more, and we'll have a lot more from the other panelists.
I mean, there's a lot to say about Clear Channel. For people who don't know me, I worked at 106 KMEL, which is probably one of the most influential radio stations in the United States when it comes to top 40 radio in the current format that it now has, where it plays urban music, hip-hop, and presents itself aggressively through doing things like summer jams and what have you. All that was really birthed at our station in the early 90s, and became a cookie cutter that stations from Los Angeles to New York have followed. So the rule was for a very long time, what KMEL does, so does the rest of the country. And when I first started, there was a beautiful thing. It wasn't owned by Clear Channel. It was owned by a family of people. It was later, you know, after 96, it got sold to Evergreen Communications. That became AM/FM, and then AM/FM became Clear Channel. And one of the first things that we were told that was when Clear Channel would take over, that their strategy and their approach towards doing business would be to streamline everything. So one person would do the job of many. And from my understanding and my observation, Clear Channel not only was going to do that and did do that, but they were also going to change the dynamics in which people who worked at stations were going to be able to interact. By that meaning, one of the good things about radio was it wasn't never a 9-to-5 job. But with Clear Channel was going to be a 9-to-5 job. They're going to find something for you to fill in. You might be the DJ in the morning and being a music director at night or something, or better yet, what they would start doing is getting some DJs to do multiple shows in other markets in a thing they call voice tracking. So that was one of the things you started to see. If you worked at one station, you might find your job consolidated, so you worked at 4 or 5 stations. And you would have to have a keen understanding, you know, go from being a hip-hop station to the rock station to the talk station and figure it all out. But what Clear Channel was doing in its practices is no different than what corporate America has been doing anyway, which is just consolidating things and making it an employer's market as opposed to an employee's market. We all saw that after the crash of the dot-com. So we can go on and on about Clear Channel, the big bad empire. I mean, it's the biggest, it's the baddest, and it plays the game and it plays it hard. I think what is probably more beneficial is to probably figure out as to what should be the approach if you don't like what they're doing to turn it around. And I say this very passionately to this audience because I think Clear Channel happened because even though we are activists and progressives, we probably didn't really take it to the full 9 yards the way we need to. So by the time legislation and things like that passed, there was an entire community that just really either one was not aware and two don't care, you know, at least the folks that I know. And so you have to kind of figure out how radio approaches its audience to get them in a mindset where they don't care and they don't think about things, and how do you counteract that? I call it social engineering or pulling emotional cord strings. At the radio station, we were really, really good at doing that, figuring out how to get people to move from point A to point B. Focus groups, I mean, you know from working there, they have the focus groups, and they sit down and ask the right questions. So at the end of the day, at least your sales staff knows who's most likely to buy a bicycle if you play a certain type of commercial, who's most likely to jump to the right if you play a certain type of thing. Politicians do this. So how have we been able to do that, knowing that they're reaching an audience that doesn't listen to radio the way we do? We super listen to radio, like, what did you say? How did you say it? Oh, okay. And you criticize it, and you have critical analysis of it. But the average person listens to it in the background, and most people, more often than not, trust what the radio says. And in certain communities, they become even more dependent upon radio because there's lack of it. So in the black community, there's a serious marriage to radio. You know, Chuck D is famous of saying that, you know, in some communities you could drop a bomb on a city and people would not know because they're tuned into the radio. And if the radio don't say it, it doesn't exist. Perfect example is last year after 9/11, an hour after those towers crashed, I got a call from New York City with somebody asking me about adding records to my radio show. I'm like, yo, the towers crashed. He goes, I didn't know. That's because the Clear Channel equivalent in New York, which was Hot 97, never got on the air and said the towers crashed for the first hour. They just played music. And so while mayhem is going around, you have people that's caught up and like, yo, I don't know about it. So that means when you start to deal with these stations, you have to understand that even though we might not like Clear Channel, it's an important part of people's lives. In fact, the saying they have is, how much have we touched you? You know, you go to a concert, you bought a Clear Channel ticket. You turn the ticket on the backside or see the billboard, it's Clear Channel. We bring you your favorite artist. And after a while, if you understand radio, the name of the game is to cultivate a habit. keep saying it over and over again. When we got on the air, it's like, what station jams? 106 KMEL. We keep saying it over and over again until it becomes automatic. And it's important to understand this, because what you're dealing with is breaking habits that people may have. And a lot of people, especially if that's all they have, if like I like hip-hop music, and there's only one or two stations that play hip-hop, and they're all owned by the same station, you're going to have a hard time getting me not to listen to that station. And in fact, I might see you as the enemy. You know, I remember last year, a couple of years ago, a bunch of people were upset with Clear Channel, came to the station, and understanding that the station prepares for this. It's like, oh yeah, there's going to be some activists come up here. They know it. So what do? They strategize and say, let's make this part of our morning show. And that's what they did. So they had a fun time when people were out there protesting, and they made it like, well, this is going to be a fun thing. You know, and listeners are listening to it, and they're going, oh yeah, you guys, you hippie guys, you leftist guys, always trying to ruin everything. So this is what you're up against. So how do you undermine that? I think one of the things that we have to do is understand it's a multifaceted approach. We have to, first of all, be very committed to raising our own media that we can control and language ourselves, and that we can eventually institutionalize for ourselves. At the same time, that's our base. We have to fight whether it's on a legal level or a social level, and just making sure that people understand what's happening. You have to understand your audience real clear so you know how to approach them. For example, if I go to East Oakland and I start telling them, oh yeah, Clear Channel owns all the stations, that might not resonate with people. But if I go, well, I understand East Oakland, and go, gee, you know there's 1,000 people who put out records, but none of y'all get your records played, and that's affecting the economics, that's going to have impact. Oh, yeah, that's right. They don't play my record. Well, now we can start building some sort of thing there. And what resources do I have to offer to help somebody whose entire block is dependent upon the success he has in getting airplay? Once I'm able to lay out and say, if you don't get played on KMEL, you can't get played on the Cube in Seattle, because they're looking at KMEL's playlist and they'll be like, well, you're from the Bay Area, you didn't get played, so what does that mean? Your record's not good. So you have to lay out that argument. That may be very different than, say, the attitude people have towards Clear Channel Radio in New York, where Hot 97 is the station that everybody looked at and said, that's the big bad empire, and Clear Channel was the saving grace. Like, thank God this competition. So you have to figure out how to reach that audience. If it's an audience that isn't into music, one of the things that I had to remember is go, gee, Clear Channel has all these billboards that said, be patriotic, donate to the 9/11 relief fund, all these things. And I had to figure out to some people and go, did you notice they never put a billboard to say, vote on March 5th? And only 26% of the people came out to vote in the election, which was supposed to be important. Now somebody else goes, yeah, you know, that's right. They didn't do that. And it's then you start to engage people in other conversations. So my job, you know, as somebody who's aware, and I think your job as people who are activists, is to make people realize what are some of the things that are missing from their lives, what little bits of information, what major things are missing that they might not think about. Because the radio station at this point has become very skilled at figuring out people habits to the point that they go, okay, if I just move, like with black folks, I've been in meetings. It's like they'll be upset if their favorite DJ is gone, but all you have to do is play the new Biggie Smalls record, and they'll forget about it. And you can't put a judgment on that. People like music, at least some people in that community. So you gotta know that that's gonna be the thing. It's like, let's see, 2 weeks, Dave's off the air, they'll be upset, they'll protest for a little, we'll weather the storm. I mean, you can calculate it down to a T and predict it, so you have to come at them with a different angle. And I'll just close up. I mean, there are things that we have to consider. For example, I would go to church groups that would be upset with KMEL because of what they played. And at the same time, these church groups would listen to another Clear Channel station and not realize that they were owned by the same company. And I had to make the case a lot of times and say, well, the station that you think is poisoning the community by playing music that's misogynist and gangsterist and all this, well, that's the same program director that doesn't play rap on your favorite station. So you have to make people realize that, and then you have to provide them with alternatives and steps that can be taken. Is there a number that you call? Is there a person that you write? Is there a congressperson that you can go to? And more importantly, and this comes back to my other remark, we got to have mediums in place so that if you tell people to turn off the radio, where they're going to go? Because, you know, even at, you know, people that are most hateful of the station, they listen to KMEL. It's like I run into them. I listened to the station yesterday, but you was out there with a picket sign protesting. But it's like, yo, there's no other station for them. So they're going to listen to a clear channel. I guess I'd be better off in answering a lot more questions, and because I could talk for hours about, you know, clear channel and give a lot of insight. But I'll just conclude by saying that everybody here has a talent. Everybody here has certain types of resources and certain type of comfort level. And I think we need to look at those collective things and figure out what's the best position that we can play. Some people organize. Some people know how to write. Some people understand legalese and can make a legal case. Some people are bridge builders. They can go from the leftist progressive white community to the black community and not miss a heartbeat, know exactly how to plug in and make the case. These are things that we have to continuously do. But I guess in conclusion, we have to go above and beyond the choir and understand that people above and beyond the choir have cultivated a habit. I think it's a bad habit, but it's a habit nonetheless, where it's like, yo, they played my favorite song, they're giving my favorite concert, you know, and I'm not really caring who owns the billboards because, you know, I don't really care. And you have to figure out how to get through all that. And that's a challenge, and I don't think there's one clear answer for it. Thank you.
And could I ask you to move over to the wall? You're right in front of my camera.
Thanks. I'm going to move this out, too. Do it again.
I think that's okay. One of the things that's interesting about Clear Channel in trying to figure out why they're a target, there's any number of reasons. I think we've already gone over a couple of them. One of the things that I find is intriguing about the company is that their corporate behavior matches a lot of their on-air behavior. The corporation, sort of as it has a corporate identity, is obnoxious and crude and somewhat vulgar, and that's inside and outside. That's the image they project outside the company. And it's the same thing on the air as well. Randy Michaels, who used to run the radio division until very recently, had a couple of corporations that he advanced their sort of models for Clear Channel. One was Walmart. He really looked up to what Walmart did. The other was McDonald's, and one of the reasons he gave for McDonald's is that a Big Mac is a Big Mac wherever you go. That's a perfect description of what they think of radio. So you have a company that is not only big, not only projects an enormous amount of power and influence and has this cast this huge shadow over culture, they're very in-your-face about it, too. So it's kind of hard to ignore them. The broadcasting model, as they seem to have one, is to commodify every aspect of the radio business. They look at independent promotion, which is basically a system where record labels funnel money to radio stations, what could be called payola, but since there's this middle person, it's technically legal. They look for a way to actually consolidate that and make more money from that than they were beforehand. They've had ideas for charging for back announcing, which is the radical idea that a DJ would tell you what song he just played. Clear Channel thought there's probably a way we could charge record companies for that, in some cases even $1,000, to let people know what the song was that just aired. I don't think there were many radio companies that would have thought of that as a sort of a profit line, but they're innovative enough to consider that a way to make money. They also do market research for record companies. They can do market research on their listeners and go back to the record company and say, this is what they like, this is what they don't like. So that's where it has sort of this two-prong effect. It affects what the record company is putting out, and it affects what's making it on the air. So it has an enormous impact on culture, and it sort of brings all the worst fears we had about media consolidation into very sharp focus. We heard a little bit about job cuts at Clear Channel stations. One of the first things to go would be a news department. There was a station in Florida where the news department was immediately canned when Clear Channel came into town and took over the station. The Clear Channel group in Washington, D.C., when a plane crashed into the Pentagon, Clear Channel doesn't have a news department there. They couldn't cover something happening literally in their own backyard, probably the most important story that they'll ever see. They had to feed a CNN radio or CBS radio, something like that, because they don't have their own indigenous news product in-house. I don't think it's very important. Sort of national formatting is the other thing that Clear Channel is famous for. The KISS stations, which there are 40-some-odd now, that's sort of a Clear Channel brand. So the KISS station in Boise sounds like the KISS station in New York, sounds like the KISS station in L.A., if they can play their cards right. The station in Boise, for example, is programmed out of San Diego, California. That's where most of the DJs are. And they actually have to insert banter into their discussions on the air about, yeah, I was at the club the other night downtown Boise. It was great. You know, these guys are nowhere near Boise. May have never even been to Boise. But that's how they have to produce radio. Because if they knew, people caught on to the idea that they were nowhere near Boise. Some people might start to make some connections there. And they have made errors on the air. And sort of embarrassing things have happened as a result. One of the Clear Channel stations in Ohio, in Akron, they were doing an interview with the Backstreet Boys, and apparently listeners thought, well, the Backstreet Boys are at the radio station, so they stormed the radio station looking for the Backstreet Boys, and they had to find, oh no, that was actually, we were just playing that and pretending that they were here. That's the kind of stuff they do all the time. Davey talked about voice tracking. It's exact same idea, that you don't need to have DJs here. You don't need to have a staff.
Can you just say something? The voice tracking is a thing they call the Profit System. It was a voice tracking company that they bought and then renamed the Profit System. And the way that it works is that the goal was to make sure that everything that ever came out of the airwaves was pre-recorded, from telephone calls on down. So an example is that, you know, voice tracker, and, you know, I got a chance to see it because half the DJs weren't even there. You know, they would find out from, you know, an intern what was going on and what the slang of the town is. So if you're in the Bay Area, you get somebody who goes, man, it's hella cold today. Man, it's hella hot. Oh, man, it's hella dope out there. Oh, I seen this hella fine female. And you would just have a whole bunch of sayings that are stored into the computer. You get one of the people that was like my intern. Because, see, it's a science to it. It's a science. You talk 12 times in a four-hour shift. You're going to do, two of your breaks are going to be the announcements of the week. We're going to be at a club. We're going to do this. The other one will be a personality break, and the other one might be a telephone call where you back announce. So if you figure it down to a science like that, then it's real easy just to do it, so I can get him to say, it's hella cold. And literally look out the window as an intern and go, yeah, it's cold today. And go, well, here's a 20-second drop to play over a 20-second intro, because in radio you only talk over the intros and outros of songs down to no more than a minute. So you just play it. It's like, yeah, this is Big Jeff. It's hella cold outside. And most people would buy into it because they don't listen to radio with that critical ear. But what happens, and I'll give it back to you, is that you missed the subtle information. When Aaliyah died, which was big for our station, we had a voice tracking thing on. So nobody mentioned that the lady died in a plane crash, because we had the voice tracking thing on, there was nobody there. It's like you're playing it, you put it all in a computer, it runs automatically from commercials on down, and can even take the breath out of your voice to speed that up a little bit, so you don't have any room, so there's no wasted airspace.
More room for commercials.
More room for commercials. So it's like that, and so a lot of the stations from New York on down to the Bay, you don't even have the DJs in. Then again, understanding how people are, how do I convince everybody in this room to know that the DJs that you listen to are there? Well, let me bring them to town for one day and make a big to-do. He's gonna be at the mall, come on down and have him do something crazy. I'm giving $1,000 away. People come out, I seen him at the mall, of course he's there. You know, I took a live phone call, or they would forward the phone to his home studio. So when the phone calls the call and he's at home in Oklahoma, yeah, this is so-and-so and so-and-so, and people go, oh, I talked to him, so he must be there. I mean, it goes all the way down to contests. You know, if you have too many black people listening to the station, you want to be diverse, what you do is you go, call a 106. Okay, you don't say 106 when you pick up the phone, you go caller, and it's like, yo, did I win? No. Oh, yo, did I win? No. Hi, did I win? Yes, you did. You call a 106. So now I got the nice sounding, non-black dialect voice female to play on the air that everybody goes, oh, this is a diverse station. It's mind tricks. And what he's talking about is pretty right on.
I just want to add one little humorous thing here. When Capstar transferred to AM/FM, our 401k plan got really screwed up at the radio station, but they promised there would be profit sharing. It turned out profit sharing was referring to the automation software they brought in, and they shared it with all the radio stations and replaced many of the DJs with profit. And it's a real quirky software. A lot of times you can spot these stations on the air because at midnight the music stops because there weren't quite enough songs in the day, and at 12:01 the station starts back up. Those are profit stations, and oddly enough, it's running on Windows 3.1. It's an obsolete operating system. And the way Clear Channel does their stuff is, if they got to buy something, we might as well buy the whole company. So that's what they did. They bought the company that made that profit software. It's a real high-tech location in Nebraska.
They'll buy nightclubs. If they have competition with somebody, I've seen them do it in the Bay. We have competition and problems with this guy. We'll buy the nightclub next to him and just start booking acts and using their vast resources to say, hey, if you perform at this nightclub, you won't get airplay on these 8 stations. That's how you keep the artists in line, and that's how you keep the record companies in check. So the very thing that could probably be a gravitating force for people, which is music and the artists, they're handcuffed because they know that even the most popular artists are going to have to bow down to a station like that. And, you know, of course, interviews are recycled. You do an interview in New York, you can run it all around the country and just insert your voice, you know, in place of the other person.
There are a couple of live DJs that are probably worth mentioning that work for Clear Channel stations. There was one in San Jose who recently was suspended for a couple of weeks because he did a joke routine after a 7-year-old girl was kidnapped and abducted in Philadelphia. He did a thing about how to properly kill a 7-year-old and dispose of the body. He actually mentioned one of the advertisers. Bubba the Love Sponge, which is another Clear Channel character who's apparently good enough to be syndicated around the country, caused a bit of a stir by having a wild boar castrated and killed in the parking lot of the station. He's also encouraged people to call the University of South Florida to complain about a Palestinian activist professor who's now out of a job. He did the same thing for a doctor's office nearby. Had the wrong doctor, but had the doctor's office closed down because they got all these threatening phone calls. So you have a lot of characters in place who are actually in some cases being syndicated to other stations around the country, so it's not just a local problem. The important thing, I guess, with Clear Channel, I think, as everyone said so far, is to think about opposition. The FCC is probably, as it currently stands, not the best place to think about that. The Justice Department has its own problems. The antitrust chief who runs that division of the Justice Department, his previous experience was working in the antitrust division for a law firm that worked for Clear Channel. So it's unlikely that he would take a really strong interest in this kind of thing. Clear Channel also heavy donors to the Republican Party, and the Mays family is very close to the Bush family financially and otherwise. There are other people making noise, other legislators, John Conyers, Russ Feingold. The recording industry's upset with them. Various unions are upset. Howard Berman, congressman from California, wants to know if they are, in fact, strong-arming artists that don't want to play in Clear Channel venues by threatening to pull them off the air. So we have a couple of interesting things going on. There's also other journalists. Eric Bollard at Salon.com, who everyone should read, has taken an active interest in this. Different reporters I've talked to at the LA Times say they want to make this really a focus of their coverage for the next year because, to them, they don't understand why this has been allowed to go on for so long. It's one of the interesting things about dealing with reporters is that you can sometimes get them interested in cracking on other media. There's some sort of competitive thing there. It's kind of childish in a way, but you probably should just use it to our advantage. Radio listenership is down. Clear Channel has financial problems, that some of which are known and some of which probably aren't known yet. So there's a lot of fascinating things going on within the company and outside the company. And what we're looking to do right now, and I think the action this morning is a great example of it, is to find those weak points and to start pushing in those areas and see what we can do and maybe somehow take down the giant beast.
So hi, my name is Jeff Perlstein. I'm the director at Media Alliance in San Francisco. It's a real honor to be here this weekend and also on this panel and to be talking about Clear Channel, which is certainly a campaign that we've been working on at Media Alliance for a while because we've had our eye on media consolidation for many years. Media Alliance has been around for 26 years, and we've been actually initially started because of concerns that working journalists had around the trends they were seeing in media even at that time, around consolidation and its impact on journalists, on the newsroom and on our media diversity and critical dialogue. So I think it's important for us to look at how Clear Channel got to be this beast. And I'll do this quickly because I think it's related to what we need to be doing about it and some stuff that's coming on the horizon. Some people mentioned earlier the 96 Telecommunications Act, and people in this crowd are probably all familiar with it, but I don't want to take that for granted. The 96 Telecommunications Act was essentially a removal of the protections that were on media ownership that were restricting big corporations from owning too many media outlets up to that point. So before 1996, actually, one radio company, for example, or a company that owned radio stations, could only have 40 stations in the whole country. Okay? The 96 Act is one thing that it did, removed the limits on national radio ownership. And now, only 6 years later, so think about that. Clear Channel, 6 years ago, owned 40 stations, maximum. Now they own over 1,200 stations. Okay? The second biggest company owns, I think, 400. And between them, the next third largest is something down like 150. So those are the kind of the two biggies out there. And Clear Channel also owns in 112 of the radio markets. Of course, that's the terminology that's used. These aren't places, but these are called markets now that we live in. 110 of them, Clear Channel has a number one or number two audience share. Okay, so they're really thoroughly, they're not just all over the place, they're really dominating and brutally dominating, as has been mentioned before, in the places that they're at, really ruthlessly buying up competitors, downsizing staffs in the offices that they're at. Voice tracking is one piece of that, but also paying people really low wages, cutting people down to the bare bones so that there isn't a new staff, there isn't much of a support staff. So the 96 Act is really important to understand what happened there, and that act was really bought and paid for by the National Association of Broadcasters. So that's partly why it's important for us to be discussing this here today. The National Association of Broadcasters being a commercial radio and TV industry's lobbying group, and they pump tons and tons of money into Congress and into lobbying on the Hill for just this very sort of legislation that removed these public interest protections. Those protections were in place because in earlier periods of U.S. media policy history, there was an understanding that a diversity of media ownership was actually vital to a healthy democracy, right? That a multiplicity of voices, a multiplicity of ownership was really important to fostering a vibrant dialogue. And if you have three people controlling everything, that's going to really narrow the terms of debate and discussion. That's bad for our society. Now we're at the point where there's, I believe, seven major companies that control most of the commercial media outlets in the whole country. So, and they're continuing to merge. It's six? Thanks, Jonathan. Yeah. Update, it's six now today. In Ben Bagdikian's kind of crucial book called The Media Monopoly, which I believe was written in the early 80s, he actually identified, and he was saying this was a crisis because there were 50 companies that were controlling the majority of media. You know, and in successive editions, he always had to change that number to the point where his latest edition, you know, and now he would have to update it saying that there's now six. So that's part of what got us in the jam that we're in. And when we talk about the jams that we're in, not just in around media, changing the media, but around changing our society at large, I think the answer that we have to come back to and how do we change is we get organized, right? And we have to organize with people who are like-minded and also people who may not be so like-minded to figure out and to work with them around educating and mobilizing to really change the situation. So I want to quickly echo some of the pieces that have been mentioned, go into a little bit different detail maybe and flesh out the picture and move us towards what's happening to change the situation and maybe some opportunities there. I do think it's a promising moment. I do think there's a much broader recognition that there's a serious problem out there. And I think a lot of this is post-911 also. We've seen the narrowing of debate and the heightening and the constrictions on media and expressions of dissenting viewpoints, diverse viewpoints in the media. And I'd say Media Alliance actually got really involved in being clued into what was going on with Clear Channel as a result of Davey's case in the Bay Area. And that's partly because we'd known Davey's work for a long while because he was a real, he created a space for social justice organizations that was absolutely unique in the commercial media, in the mainstream media. While he'd worked at public interest stations and public stations like KPFA, for example, which people expect progressive viewpoints, and there's a certain community that tunes in there, he had carved out one of these rare spaces in the commercial media realm where you could hear some of these voices. So there were lots of organizers who were working on environmental justice issues, the incarceration and criminalization of young people, workers' rights, who had a consistent platform on a station that was talking to mostly urban young people. And it was an opportunity and a space for organizing. So when Davey was fired, which they said were for, you know, personnel reasons and all this stuff, but it's, you know, we thought it was pretty suspect that he'd been there for 11 years with an exemplary record. And, you know, soon after he had Barbara Lee on the air talking about why she was the lone dissenting vote in Congress against the appropriations of Afghanistan. He had Boots Riley talking about, you know, and questioning whether it's patriotic and appropriate for black folks to be flying the flag given the history of racism in this country. And it's calling out some other important and critical questions that all of a sudden Davey was shown the door. And, you know, they came back with this personnel thing. And, you know, it also seems pretty suspect because they'd let lots of people go before, but someone who'd been around for 11 years, they have going away parties, they have all kinds of stuff. That wasn't the case here. And so we actually got involved because, and I say to the credit, and I think this is partly why this is important and speaks to this is a model for organizing, is that we didn't jump in as a media organization right away, actually. I wish we had, but it actually was groups, the social justice organizations who've been organized, who actually came to us because they were upset because the space for their voices to get out was now removed. This point of access, this rare space for their access had been removed. And so these groups got really engaged around media work, which they hadn't necessarily been before. So you had lots of youth organizations getting involved. You had the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights getting involved. Some of the other work, Latino Issues Forum is getting involved, and really getting involved in local media accountability work. So I think that's an important model for us to look at as far as going beyond the choir and going beyond the folks who identify themselves as media activists or media democracy activists, is figuring out the spaces where these issues are resonating and how to support people in their work that's related to media. Some things that are bubbling up real quickly, and Peter and others have touched on them. I would say in the courts, there's a really crucial case that's important because it's precedent setting. This guy who was doing independent concert promotion in Denver, Colorado, I think his name is Nobody in Particular Presents, is the name of their concert promotion. They've been really almost run out of business by the fact that Clear Channel is so ruthlessly dominating concert promotion there. And the way that they ruthlessly dominate is that they play off illegally their radio station control and also their concert promotion control. So they come to artists and companies who are owning these artists and say, well, look, if you don't kick down a significant amount of advertising for our radio station and to play your artist, then your artist isn't going to get to play in Denver. We control these venues, and they're not going to get any airplay. And vice versa, to the point where this is the case in most of the major cities around the country. So they dominate both realms, and they've really narrowed the spectrum of voices that can afford to pay to be on the radio and also to be in the concert venues. Well, this guy took him to court alleging that this is anti-competitive, you know, shocking allegation. In an earlier time, this would be very clearly recognized as anti-competitive, as monopolistic, and an antitrust violation. So there have been lots of antitrust lawsuits filed around the country. The reason this one's significant is a judge has now actually agreed and said that there is evidence and merit to these charges. And so they're moving forward with actually taking depositions from folks, some of whom are actually in the industry, and now they have to be compelled to testify. So it's really important testimonials are going to start coming out around that case. So it's precedent setting in one way, and also important that we'll start to hear some of these voices. Also the FCC, I think it's important, as was mentioned, we can't really count on them at this point because three of the four people are Republicans on the panel, and they're bought and sold, you know, and they've been bought out essentially by the NAB and Clear Channel's folks. But even they are taking notice, and they've had to because things are so egregious in such a bad state. And that's demonstrated by the fact this one instance in Charlottesville, Virginia, where they have actually preliminarily denied a transfer. Clear Channel wanted to buy yet another station there. This is unprecedented. They haven't done this since 1969. So while all these mergers have been going on and on and on and on, this suggests that things have gotten to such a state that even the FCC is having to say something, at least slap their wrists a little bit. And then I just echo, too, that in the legislative arena, we've seen this bill proposed by Senator Feingold of Wisconsin called the Competition in Radio and something, something. and Concert Industries Act. So clearly, they're without mentioning Clear Channel specifically, even in the name of the act, they're going right at Clear Channel's practices of leveraging synergistically, as they would say, and monopolistically, as we would say, of playing them off against each other. That's a space as well where people can get involved around pressuring their local representatives to co-sponsor this. And Feingold, you know, is no lightweight. He was, as people know, the co-sponsor of the campaign finance reform, which, you know, we can quibble about whether it really came through with all that we had hoped for and expected, but it did really garner a widespread support in a broad sector of the public, and I think that's a good model that we can look towards, and clearly his staff has some experience with that, and he has some relationships on the Hill around that.
Can I say one thing about that?
Yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
One thing that we have, Prometheus has brought a whole bunch, Pete Peters will stand up. We have a bunch of cards. We've been speaking to the people in Feingold's office, and they were really, really excited to hear that any activists at all were interested in helping Feingold's office to get support with their local legislature for this bill. What is really necessary right now is a co-sponsor. Like, it was the McCain-Feingold campaign finance reform bill, but right now it's just Feingold. And there's a couple of different states where Feingold's office thinks that we can get some influence on some of the senators. So please take these postcards, reproduce them, and have the people in your community send them to your senators. It's more the senators right now that need to be encouraged to co-sponsor this. I know senators in Utah and in Georgia right now are considered really good targets right now for co-sponsorship. So if you're interested in this, we could really use some help. And just fill out these postcards and reproduce them.
Yeah, and political anarchist too, but if you heard, I'm an anarchist and I vote. So if you do one thing or leave the office,
the political.
I'll vote for her and he will mail it for you.
Yeah, you can hand it to us.
The political context in which they're speaking on is something that we can overlook in the sense that not only the owners have close ties to the Bush family and what have you, but just on local levels, they are involved with the politics. In the city of Oakland, you know, they made a deal with Mayor Jerry Brown to buy the bus shelters.
The street furniture.
You know, the bus shelters in San Francisco, well, they didn't really cut the deal, but they have access to the newspaper racks. And the point being is that I've seen firsthand, you know, when you're there, you look at your playing field and you go, okay, who's most likely to upset the apple cart, and you go and you appease them. So there are a lot of people that, for example, when my situation came down, that were really upset, but had essentially been on payroll because they were getting money from the Summer Jam concerts that we were doing, and a lot of their budget was in there. So it's like, you know, I'm not going to put everybody on Front Street, but there were some very main organizations that were just absent when you had thousands of people writing letters and everything. You're like, gee, how come these main organizations didn't do this, but didn't just haven't worked at the station and knowing that they got a check every year and that check was part of the Summer Jam thing? Those things were very deliberately sculpted out. It's like, okay, you're the NAACP, you're this group, you're the biggest church, you know. Let's hook it up and make sure that we do something charitable for you to the point that you become very dependent. And then also, again, playing into the fact you get a lot of people that talk a good game until it's time for airtime. I've seen that happen. Man, this is messed up what they did to you, but, you know, because they're going to give me a 15-minute show and not the 2 hours that you have, it's important that we get at least one voice out there. So I'll go do it, you know. And we've seen that, you know, people getting bought off like money. What are you doing? You know, it's like they're not going to let you speak the way I was speaking, but I got to try because, and you have it happen. So at the end of the day, the type of people that you get on the air are people who are just either one so very happy to be on that they won't say a damn thing. They're now specializing in finding people who can look and walk and talk the talk. So you get brothers on the air that sound like they're from the community but never hang out in the community. You know, until you pointed out, good man, you ever see them in the community? Nah, you know, come to think of it, I never did, but it sounds like it. So, you know, this is all smoke and mirrors, as radio is famous for doing, and we have to be aware of it because it can be played the other way. You know, for example, I can get a show and say, let me put on Media Alliance and maybe put on the Green Party, and people go, see, he's kind of progressive, but I'll never go there.
and I'll never move past that 6 a.m. slot on Sunday morning, or I'll never maybe put Ralph Nader on, even though I'm had the Green Party representatives on. It's just how you, is what you put out there and what you eliminate subtly that will keep the rest of the population going, well, they sound cool because they got, they have a public affairs show, or the guy in the morning, he gave money to, let me just show you how deep it gets. We had a fund set up for disasters. You know, how can we bring people together in the face of something that would really be harmful? So in other words, a family got their house, their kids burned, and we already had stuff set up, and we got our morning DJs to go out there and be the station that cares. So, you know, you got people on the air like, we're raising money for this family, but as cynical as it was like, this is something that you already took into account, that one day there's going to be something that's going to allow us to shine and be a part of the community. Mm-hmm. So we had $2,000 or $3,000 that we were able to kick off into the, you know, to the relief efforts for, you know, this family that lost their kids. But even the people was like, yo, I never seen these guys before. I'll take the money, but I never seen them in our neighborhood before, during, and after. But everybody talks about it. It was so nice that they helped out these kids. But it could have been a cat that got killed that day, and we would have used that same money. We whatever the excuse was, is what we were going to do. And that's how it operates.
So here we're talking a lot around media consolidation and what needs to be changed around the corporate media's control of our public resources, the airwaves. But I think it's important for us to figure out why we should bother organizing around Clear Channel, right? I mean, these issues are already these issues are the case in the other realms of media too, right? Television, newspapers are also consolidated. Why is it strategic to talk about Clear Channel? And I want to bring up my two answers to that question, and hopefully we can have more discussion around that. One is because Clear Channel is really upset a lot of different constituencies, and those constituencies are getting active around it. Okay. We haven't seen, and this is one of the reasons why I think it's an opportunity, is we haven't seen lots of folks in Detroit, Seattle, Cleveland, San Francisco, Chillicothe, Ohio, Tallahassee, Florida, getting up in arms around AOL Time Warner so much, you know, and having boycotts of the local stations with broad community coalitions, of unions getting involved, all this stuff. All this is happening around Clear Channel, and it's happening for the most part without the involvement of people in the media democracy movement. Just as also is promising, or at least up to this point for the most part. And also the stuff that we talked about, the legislative stuff, the judicial stuff, for the most part isn't yet because folks in this room, you know, some of us, and some others beyond this room, it's not that we focused on it so much, it's happened somewhat organically. So I think it's a strategic that stuff is already bubbling up on its own, and it's already affecting folks who are recognizing it on their own, who are beyond the choir that we talk to a lot of times in these conferences. So if we can really come to recognize this and support these folks in principled coalition, then that's a really huge opportunity for organizing and building coalition in general around media that hasn't really happened. Why is it important now? Well, it's important now because the situation's bad, but also especially because just yesterday, people may be aware that the FCC finally announced that they are going to officially create a rulemaking to look at eliminating the very last vestiges of protections around media ownership and media concentration. So what the last nails in the coffin that they didn't hammer in 96 that got us this point, they're going to hammer them in if this rulemaking goes through. It's called the Omnibus Ownership Ruling, and this is why it's also strategically important. It's not just about radio. What they've done is they've grouped all different media decisions around ownership together in this one ruling that they're going to decide on all at once, yes or no, up or down. And it's related to whether they're going to remove any last remaining ownership limits on radio, whether they're going to eliminate the cross-ownership protection on owning a newspaper and a television station in the same city, on whether they're going to remove the cap or up the cap on cable and TV broadcast audience reach. So right now, cable and TV networks are only allowed to reach 35% of the national audience. So this will also be bumped up or possibly removed as well. These are all going to be grouped together. So Clear Channel is also a strategic opportunity. I personally don't believe that we're going to take down Clear Channel in the next 6 months, right? But what we can do is we can paint them as the poster child that they are for the ills of media consolidation and how rapidly that's happened in 96. They've basically happened. They've been created in the last 6 years since this legislation happened. And so that's why we have an opportunity to sink the omnibus ruling by really holding them up as the example of how bad this is. Sink the omnibus ownership ruling in the spring and build momentum off of that. There's an educational process. And then we start moving towards bigger pieces of rolling back some of the ownership stuff, of possibly breaking them up around antitrust violations and the way that the Bell's telephone monopolies were broken up. But it's, you know, some stepwise progressions, and I think it's strategic. And I'll wrap up, and I'm really interested to hear what other people have to say and think around it too. Thanks.
Anybody else want to?
I have like two more things. Okay. Okay, first of all, what this was dropped off in the middle of what other people were saying. Where the action that we did today was the presentation of a new competitor to Clear Channel, which takes everything that Clear Channel does and kind of reduces it, boils it down to an evil little point, like firing a lot of personnel in a station. Why not fire everyone in a station? Why not have robots run the station? Why not have one kind of format given to every kind of station that is possible? So, and we did this in front of Profit Systems, which we didn't mention before, which is the voice tracking technology. And I guess I'll show you guys this. Like Davey D was saying, how many ways have we reached you today is Clear Channel's slogan. How many times has Cheap Channel breached you today is our slogan. So using tools like this, and also like Davey was saying, being able to understand the details of a particular market or a particular group of people, like this is going, this we took into the NAB so we could reach people inside. They came up to us and they laughed and they understood what the joke meant and they took pictures and they followed us out. So we have now married successfully the protest movement to the media juggernaut. And so that was one moment of success. But we also need to make sure that we kind of swarm over all of these different tactics, like using the legislature, doing research inside different media markets and finding out what is necessary to do. Yeah, that's all I really wanted to say on that. Cool.
Let me just let you in on a little inside joke about Cheap Channel. When they first took over the stations I was at, they sent corporate people in to start scoping us out for the automation and how they could save money and pretty much figure out who they could eliminate. And that's who I first heard the term Cheap Channel from, was when some of the corporate young men that came to the station in business suits who worked for the information technology side of the company. And they kind of mentioned Cheap Channel, and I kind of thought about that for a while. But the more I got to see the way they operated and the way they did things, it really fit them. And more people started using that phrase. And within a year, there was a company memo sent out about Cheap Channel and how we are not Cheap Channel and we are not trying to cut wages of our employees. So it really hit a nerve with management there. So whenever you can use Cheap Channel in front of a camera or on TV, know that you're striking a very serious nerve with them, because they think they have a great reputation, and for you to tarnish that really upsets them quite a bit. So just to say Cheap Channel really cheeses them off. So I'll let you know that.
There's a lot of people that work in the station that find themselves under a lot of stress and would probably be in complete agreement with what's going on. So you can't just, you know, look at everybody who works here and figures that they're all part of the situation. A lot of people, I was one of the very few people that had the type of freedoms and type of reach, you know, when I was there. So I was a little bit more able to be outspoken, but I had places to fall back on, and radio wasn't my career. I mean, speaking the way that I'm speaking to you today meant that I had to give up my servant's pay. If I had signed what they wanted me to sign, if I had signed a contract, which I didn't want to do, I couldn't do that. I mean, you've seen those contracts. You can't.
Yeah.
What I'm doing would bring me up for a lawsuit, or I have to pay back the money. So it was at a sacrifice on that end that I'm able to just say what I'm able to say, because it's like, I ain't signed nothing, I ain't take nobody's money. You know, end of story. But there's a lot of people that signed up on the dotted line, and this is their career, and they're not going to say a damn thing. But if you get to know your community, you'll find that they're, man, like, whew,
I'm with you here. I'll open the back door, you know, just don't burn my shit down. So you have to keep that in mind. Even some of the people in management understand.
They're afraid.
You know, what's going on. But a lot of people are very much afraid. And I say that to say that when you speak to people, especially when you engage them, you can basically even appeal to that. Say, man, you know what's going on there. So, you know, you should be on my side.
Right.
You should point me in the direction of who's making these decisions, because I'm helping you out in the long run, because you only got $2 and 15 stations to run on that budget, you know? And so a lot of people, you'd be surprised, be like, man, I am down with this, because they cut people's... They cut their benefits. They cut people. Not only did they cut their benefits, but they cut their in the sales department.
They took their
commission away.
And then in the trade magazines, they would say that they're not doing that. But the facts was they were taking their commissions away and restructuring the sales department. Yeah. So there's less management who are getting a percentage of the station. So all the percentages go to Wall Street or San Antonio.
So a lot of people that are there, you know, it's just like, man, this is my job. This is what I got to do. I got 3 kids and a mortgage. And, you know, when before they came, I was making 50 G's, now making 35 G's. Living in the Bay Area, there's nothing else I can do. You know, that's that.
Let me just talk about the labor thing a little bit longer. The people who work in radio are really afraid of losing their jobs. In radio, you get fired for no reason, typically. Oh, they decided to change the format. Your voice doesn't work with the new format. Gone. No reason, no excuse. You're just gone. Luckily, they fired me over an email, so I got a reason, and it's an illegal reason, so I got a court case. But if they had just said, we're firing you just because, then I wouldn't have any case. But they actually admitted to breaking the law by firing me for a personal email I sent from home. So now I have a legal case because they fired me for lawful conduct outside of the workplace. But radio people are really afraid of getting their jobs lost. It's really easy for a DJ to get fired. You know, if some sponsor doesn't like something he said, they say something to their salesman, and the salesman says something to the general manager, and then pretty soon that guy's on the all-night shift. And at a lot of radio stations, that's the automated shift where you're working part-time. So a lot of them get cut to part-time, you know, and they look for the ass-kissers and they promote them. And that's usually you'll see in the management levels. So there's two things that we need to outreach. We need to outreach to people who don't understand any of this, the people that didn't come today. That's the hardest part, like explaining these issues to your parents or other people that aren't hip to the media. That's really hard. And the other outreach is to actual people inside, like us. Well, we were working in Clear Channel. We saw what was wrong, but we were isolated. We didn't realize there are other people that felt the same way. So when we come to places like this, we realize, hey, I'm not alone. I'm not crazy. There is something wrong here. And it's very good to see so many people turn out.
I realized that I kicked off when I was talking about the need to organize, and that's how we change, that's how we make social change. And we talked a little bit about some of those opportunities, but I wanted to just highlight real quickly some things that I have recently learned about and are pretty inspiring and I think could be models, because someone really famously once said, all politics are local. And so while we're trying to affect national policy around telecommunications, there's really, we need to figure out what the entry points are for folks where they live, so that they can really feel engaged, feel like there are some winnable victories that then can lead to some engagement at the national level, and whether that's lobbying their local elected representative or whether that's a national boycott and all kinds of stuff. I think we need to figure out what the local entry points are. I want to mention, it was alluded to that the suspension of Mikey, this DJ at KSGO, is that where it's at? Yeah, KSGO in San Francisco, it's like a classic rock format. He was suspended, as Peter mentioned, for some really disgusting commentary he made, kind of spoofing the kidnapping and murder of these young girls. That he wasn't suspended right away. People should know that. He was suspended because people organized around it. And I actually spoke with this woman, India Weeks, who's really involved today. And she basically, with two other people she knows, was outraged, called us up. She started writing press releases. She started getting people to phone and fax and email the station. And they were flooded by so many responses that they had to suspend this guy because there was so much public outrage. Well, she said that actually he's been suspended again. This is like breaking news. I talked to her an hour ago because he came back on the air and then he did some spoof satire single of an R. Kelly song where he was talking about basically raping like 12-year-old girls who haven't hit puberty yet.
And so they did a similar thing where they put up these press releases, and it got picked up by the AP. It got covered in the San Jose Mercury News. So this is getting national coverage, and these are people that don't have organizational infrastructure necessarily. They're just fed up, and they're working with other people who are fed up. So I think we need to really work with folks wherever we live. And one piece around that is documenting coverage. That's another project I wanted to mention. We're working right now in partnership with a really unique and powerful project in the Bay Area called the Youth Media Council. We're in the midst of it right now to actually document the drive time shows. We're taping them 6 to 10 a.m. and they're 3 to 7 shifts for 3 weeks. And then the Youth Media Council is going through this rigorous process of analyzing the content, what they're saying, what they're not saying, and then they're going to file a paper. We're going to present it to the community. It's going to be right around the anniversary of Davey being fired, actually, so we're going to try to garner some attention around that and say, you still are not addressing the community's needs or concerns. You disrespected us by firing Davey and taking away that space, and you still haven't addressed the broader question of where there's place for community input. So we really need to be holding them accountable locally, and then that builds coalition that people can really build onto as far as moving the legislative stuff. I mean, I think we're lucky in that we've seen some legislative motion, some judicial motion without too much pressure, but we all know that major change only happens with pressure from the grassroots. So we need to keep building and figure that out. Lastly, just real quick, I want to make sure people have some resources to look to for more information about what we're talking about. One is Salon.com and this author, investigative journalist Eric Bollert. But you can just do a search on Salon for Clear Channel. And he's been doing some of the best reporting, and his latest one is excellent, called Radio's Titan Hits the Skids. And it documents a lot of these areas where they're facing some real criticism. I'd also mention clearchannelsucks.org, yeah, which is one of the best sites out there, which is really gathering all different reports of information around Clear Channel. There's also cheapchannelradio.com, which is now debuted as one of the competitors of Clear Channel. And Media Alliance and some allies, along with Prometheus, have started a site called stopclearchannel.com, which we're hoping can be not just about information around Clear Channel, but a hub for organizing around it and sharing some of those models. So there's a sign-up list there, too, and it's kind of an emerging website, but there'll be more coming as well there.
We'd like to hear some questions from the audience. Please speak up very loudly, and we might be able to get it into the webcast as well.
Someone just asked, what's your name? Marty? Marty just asked if we could specify a little bit more about the financial trouble that Clear Channel is in. You should follow their stock price. It's been, it's been going down pretty steadily, teetering at times and dropping pretty fast. They were ranked for the 90s like something like the fifth best performing stock, and now they're far from that. And really what has happened is after the different deregulation acts that happened in the early 90s and again in 96, Clear Channel was able to get what the American capitalist system really considers to be the best indicator of economic success. They bought up a lot of stuff. So their stock price went up. So they bought more stuff. So their stock price went up. So they bought more stuff. Right now, lobbyists from the NAB and from Clear Channel are trying to, what we were talking about before, they're trying to get the omnibus ruling passed in 2003 so they can give themselves a shot in the arm, so they can buy some more stuff. And it's been proven that the acquisition of all of these different industries and all of these different stations has not been really possible from their headquarters in San Antonio. They've lost stations. Stations haven't performed well. They've had to do a lot of layoffs, and they've had to close centers. So as Jeff was saying, we really want to make sure that deregulation's biggest media criminal, biggest poster child for failure is Clear Channel. But and Davey had something to say.
One thing that you have to keep in mind, though, even with that, that doesn't mean that the airwaves get opened up. In fact, they become tightened under financial difficulties, because then you do two things. One, you're going to play it safe to go for the least common denominator. So when we're cheering about, like, oh, yeah, they're losing, that means that you're going to go from hearing the same 15 songs to the same 10, you know. The second thing is that, and you could check any playlist, you'll start to find that you become even more married to the four major record companies. This is something I wanted to correct you on that. Yeah. Like the record companies have a relationship, a love-hate relationship with these stations, but they'll only go so far as to not have competition in the form of other independent record labels that start to pop up. So they'll put up with the stuff, even though they don't like it, and work out a deal, just as long as none of the things on the playlist come from outside those main four. So you check a look at those playlists, you know, you'll start to see all across the country, you go, damn, they're the same song on every station, whether you're in Arkansas or New York or California, it's the same thing. That causes economic hardships in a lot of communities that have said, I'm going to go from this step to the next step, and now I need to, you know, I have a record company, I put records out, you know, we're ready to move, and all of a sudden you got, you know, the four majors that have bought and paid for everything, and they will do that even more. You guys in financial trouble? Okay, we'll buy you that van. We'll buy you their concert. We'll make sure that we'll promote whatever it is you need to do. So they become more married and more beholden to other mega corporations that are going to keep them afloat. So we need to be very much aware of that.
We were seeing a lot of that. You know, I was in a little market. It's only 150,000 people. And we didn't have the money to get nice remote vans or inflatable mascots and stuff for our remotes. So deals were made with the record companies. And, you know, I'm not saying that they guaranteed to play certain records, but we got those things from the record companies, not out of our promotions budget, because those were cut because corporate realized that we could make deals with the record companies for the things
and
we needed.
And they're done in nice ways. Like Master P did a Christmas wish. So, you know, this is how it gets played so you can recognize it. You know, he'll give you a bunch of money, you know, in his masterpiece, Christmas Wish. So the station gets the benefit of giving people your gift at hard times. Whoever's hardship gets their gift. But it's not coming out the station budget. It's coming out of Master P playing Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. You know, but if you think about it, all the radio station wants to do is look good. You see what I'm saying? So they'll take the imaging from anywhere. But to me, it's not really illegal, especially if you go, well, shoot, P don't have an album coming out until 6 months from now. So that's an advance payment on the album. So you're not going to hear his album played. So you can't say, well, it was an even exchange, but it's an investment, mm-hmm. you know, in doing business.
More questions? The question was Clear Channel's representation with labor unions. We didn't have any union where I was. They were busted a long time ago. In your market, did you guys have a union?
Mm-hmm. I know there are some.
Yeah. Clear Channel is known for union busting. I mean, that seems kind of, I'm sure it's what you're alluding to, right across the board. And they've really upset a whole spectrum of unions. So folks who got involved in Cleveland was a painter's union. Who actually used to put up the billboards there, and when Clear Channel bought the billboard company, they came in and busted that union. Here in Seattle, there was a big rally by the musicians union, because Clear Channel, and yet another realm that they're in, is around musical theater productions and promotions. And they had a Broadway production of The Music Man, which, because of pressure, they had a union shop there. But then when they took it around the country, they were using non-union employees and union busting. And so the Musicians Union here in Seattle brought hundreds of people out in the streets. And then AFTRA, should be mentioned, has taken actually a very public position, American Federation of Television and Radio. Yeah. And then they're national. They filed a brief, a 20-page brief to the FCC, critiquing media consolidation and naming Clear Channel's role in that right in the first paragraph. So it's important to figure out, you know, who we can work with in the unions and labor as well, because they could potentially be some very strong allies there.
We're being told we have 5 minutes left. A couple more questions.
I've got one for David D. What are some of the differences in working?
Well, for me, I was always working at KPFA, and in fact, when I started working at KMEL, the deal that I struck, which was unusual because KPFA is on a commercial band, was that I wasn't going to work at KMEL if I had to give up KPFA. So I kind of came in there with an exception to the rule and just knew how to draw the line. But for me, there's two differences. I mean, in terms of as a DJ and reaching the audience, The advantage that we had, and which was such a loss, was that on KPFA we talked a lot of theory. We might talk about the prison industrial complex, and I could do the same exact show on KML and actually have people like, I just got out of jail yesterday, and you have a whole, you know, does your theory really hold up to somebody who, you know, who is on some other page, like Prop 21. There were cats who was like, man, I want another jail, a new jail. We need new jails. And you're like, what? But people been in and out of jail. They want a new jail. So you figure out where your weakness is. And so that was always enlightening. And I think a lot of organizers who had the access to that airwaves on the commercial side were very thankful, because it really sharpened and allowed them to focus on what they were going to do. On the commercial side, you know, the obvious thing is that you're talking about power and a consistency, especially with certain audiences. It's great that we have, like, resources on KPFA, but I don't expect Pookie, who I really want to reach, to remember that I'm on at 4 o'clock on this day to tune in. That's not the reality. They listen as a habit to that station. And so really, the amount of time it might take you to get people out to an event, you know, all I have to do is go on the air in 10 seconds, that would happen. And a lot of people had the benefit of me being able to go on and say, oh yeah, they're doing a Momia rally tomorrow at such and such a park. And a lot of people could show up because they heard it that one time, overlooking all the stuff that happened with the flyering that people did. So those are the type of differences in terms of just how they operate. I find that every radio station has its quirks. You know, you have your battles on public and community radio. You got some people that have certain ideologies where they're real dogmatic about it and they won't let go. And on commercial radio, you have a different type of thing. But one of the things that I always say to people on the progressive side is that even though you might not like the commercial stations, they do have a formula and a model for success. And there's a lot of things that they do that you may want to pick up to use in how you approach things, because they spend millions of dollars to figure it out. You know, when you get number one, two, and three station in the market, it's not just because they have that dominance, but they do research. So if they're going, gee, you know, they are doing these type of steps, if you can adapt them to the community station to a certain degree, you may find that it works. You know, it may be how you language things, it may be how you present information, it may be, you know, street teams, for example. You know, radio stations get their information out by street teams. If we're activists, why not have street teams that go out there and do things? If I want to go into the NAB, I might wear a suit and tie and look just like them, as opposed to dressing where they go, oh, that's hippies, those are hippies, because they already have that picture. So show up, and I got suit and tie.
So we did today.
I might be like you, you know? I mean, these are things that you just learn from both sides, and you know, I'm glad I stuck with the KPFA thing. So it's been a good resource, and you know.
Any questions from anybody else?
I have one more comment. Prometheus Radio Project has a whole lot of really excellent materials, both informative sheets about Clear Channel that you can take with you, and also nice kind of images that you can show people so they can learn more and go to, like, Stop Clear Channel and Cheap Channel Radio. So just go over and take a closer look at that cheapchannelradio.com banner, and please pick up some stuff, because we're really focusing on some of the materials part of this movement. And thanks for listening.
There's one thing we can do to learn from a radio station, and we did this after, you know, a bunch of people made these bumper stickers. You can get to the sentiment of people by having those bumper stickers. You know,
that's
Clear
true.
Channel sucks because, you know, for some people, they're not political. For others, they don't play local shit, you know, all the way down the line. But you'd be surprised, because really what you want to do is you want to get people in the habit of thinking that way. You know, just remember, people might be old enough to remember in the 70s when they had that whole thing about disco sucks. Remember, it's like disco sucks. It killed things in the record industry. Well, you know, the same thing, because on the other side, we're cultivating listeners to remember how great they are. What station jams? Who's your party station? You know, they do that 24 hours a day. Well, you remind people, nah, them stations suck. And people, they'll find reasons after experience. Yeah, they do suck. Give me the bumper sticker. Let me put it on. I don't like them. You know?
We can be sure this movement is growing, because Clear Channel's not making any friends. Clear Channel doesn't make friends. They have business relationships. And when the business relationship is over, you're not their friend anymore. So every day there are more and more people joining this movement. Back when Capstar and AM/FM were the predecessors to Clear Channel, they sent out this press release to all the media organizations, and they sent all these little buttons to us, and they wanted to encourage all their employees to volunteer for various projects on their own time without pay.
And about 6 months later, we got merged into a bigger part of the company that didn't care too much about it. This was just a smokescreen, and they were encouraging the employees to volunteer. I'd like to encourage all of you to volunteer, to make your own media, get involved with the IMCs, do public access on cable television, or just try to explain to other people what's going on and let them know that we've got to do something, or pretty soon we're going to have Clear Channel radio everywhere, and it's all going to be the same crap.
If you do your own media, let me give you a suggestion, because one of the things I have is like my own sites and all that. If you're able to consolidate or put bullet points of your information, there's a lot of websites that might not be an activist in terms of what you do. They might just be entertainment, like hip-hop sites or something. They'll run it just to have content. You know, if you make it easier, you know, share that information for those who have the skills. You know, there are so many people that get stories run, and even in community papers where they go, damn, I don't have time to do it. Oh, snap, here's a synopsis of this meeting. You know, here's a rundown of this company. You know, and it's like, shoot, I'll put it up on my site. And that's where people can go, well, damn, I read the thing about Jay-Z, and what's this thing about Clear Channel? You know, that's how you get it in people's faces. So if you have those skills, you know, network with people outside of the circle, and you never know what doors can open as a result.
You can't walk into a workshop with Prometheus without walking out with a pile of paper and without getting hit up to do a couple of things very concretely. We're going to pass these out. These are the things we were passing out today to the people in the radio industry. They basically say, heard by Clear Channel, tell us your story. And what we're asking for is we want to find more people like David D. and like Brad who can tell the stories of what happens to people that work for that company.
We really need people from the inside who are not too afraid to talk to us, who can know that we're going to be confidential, but we just need their personal stories.
We would have taken out an ad in the major trade press if we'd had the money to get this out. And so first thing I'm going to do, and I ask you, if you got money, you want to see this this ad in the trade press and see a lot of people calling in, telling us the stories of Clear Channel and mobilizing into a powerful force that can sway Congress on these things, well, there it is. Another thing that we could really use, Hannah wrote this wonderful op-ed called Why Feed the Gorilla. We've got copies of it there. If you can get it posted as an op-ed in your local newspaper, we really, really appreciate your efforts. Or if you can write your own that's more appropriate to your local situation.
And take the Cheap Channel press release, which is funny.
Yeah. And the third thing is the Cheap Channel press release. We really need audio. We need more DJs. We need to represent more parts of the country. Right now, our only DJs are in Tuscaloosa and Nome, Alaska. And so on. And so we want Cheap Channel to grow. So we're soliciting audio files from you.
You can email them to us and we'll put them right up.
We want you to join the Cheap Channel family.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.